Even as Pope Francis has focused his efforts toward issues of justice and human dignity since assuming leadership of the Roman Catholic Church, engaging pressing secular issues in the language of morality and faith, he also regularly has engaged leaders of other faith traditions in pursuit of these goals. How different is that from other recent popes, and how significant is it for those of us who long for inspiring leadership in interreligious terms? I'm joined by Josephine McKenna, a veteran journalist who covers all things Vatican for Religion News Service. She's speaking to us from Rome. Jo, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Well, I'm great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Pope Francis traveled to Turkey for the Thanksgiving weekend. What was the announced purpose of this trip?
Well, the Pope was invited by the Ecumenical Patriarch, the head of the Eastern Orthodox Church, and also, of course, by the Turkish government. So there was almost a dual purpose to this trip. He also wanted to legitimize Christianity in that region, which, as we know, is really under siege with the violence that's being perpetrated by ISIS. So he wanted to send a very strong message to legitimize Christianity, to reach out to what he perceives perhaps to be a good Muslim country, a legitimate Muslim country, but also to support the Eastern Orthodox faith and also to support Christians who are really at times threatened themselves in a country like Turkey, which is 99% Muslim.
Mm-hmm. I noticed, in fact, in a quote that I read in the secular press that came from just a citizen on the streets in Turkey. What makes the Pope think we're interested in what he thinks about things from his point of view? How did he deal with that kind of questioning or even cynicism?
Well, that's a very important kind of comment, I think, the one that you've mentioned, because unlike his other international visits where he's been mobbed by thousands of Catholics and Christians, in this case, there were very few people on the street. And the country is around 77 million people in Turkey, and only around 120,000 Christians. Now, that's minuscule. And in some cases, the Catholic Church has been concerned about threats against Christians in Turkey itself. And in fact, in the last decade, a Catholic priest and a Catholic bishop were murdered in separate incidents in Turkey. And the Eastern Orthodox faith has also been concerned about increasing threats on some of their members. So it's interesting to see that there was that kind of internal reaction. And you have to ask yourself, who was he really speaking to by undertaking this visit? It obviously wasn't to communicate with Christians on the ground. It was to use this as a platform on a bigger level, on an international level, to communicate certain things that were important to him.
You know, I remember everyone in the news media were amazed that the Roman Catholic Pope and the Eastern Orthodox Patriarch would even get together. And then on this visit, the Roman Catholic Pope submitted to a blessing from Eastern Orthodox Patriarch Bartholomew. Joe, what was the significance of that?
Well, I think that was really an amazing image, an enduring image from this visit, like the one we saw earlier this year on the Pope's visit to the Middle East when he stopped at the wall on the West Bank for a moment of silence. That went around the world. And again, this one did too. And what does it say? It says, he has forged a remarkable friendship, a remarkable working relationship with the Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew, who heads the Eastern Orthodox Church. And this is also putting these two churches back on the road to unification. For most of us in the modern world, we forget that the Eastern Orthodox Church was once part of the Catholic Church and they split nearly 1,000 years ago. So there's potential to get these two back together. For now, I think we're seeing a very powerful personal relationship. When they see each other, they communicate in Italian, incidentally. So they can communicate very freely. And it's about building bridges. And I think ever since day one, Pope Francis has been very strong on that. And he's not only doing it with Bartholomew, he's obviously reaching out to other faiths as well.
Mm-hmm. You write that the Pope said resolving the schism will never happen if left in the hands of theologians.
I wouldn't take that as a criticism from the Pope, but he did make the point on the return trip back to Rome that this is an issue that the issue of reunification has been on the table for a while, and even Saint Pope Paul VI, during his pontificate, had been making moves towards the Eastern Orthodox faith as well. So he was making the point that they couldn't even decide on a common day for Easter because, as we know, the Christians celebrate Easter Sunday on a certain day and the Orthodox faith has a different Easter. And St. Pope Paul VI had suggested that perhaps it was a good idea to pick a single day in April that would work for everyone, and they couldn't even agree on that. So he, I think, half-jokingly said, let's not wait for the theologians to build these bridges. We need to forge ahead.
Joe, this week, Pope Francis joined other global faith leaders in taking a very strong stand on human trafficking around the world. You wrote about this for Religion News Service. Would you please summarize this initiative for us?
Well, it's a very historic initiative by Pope Francis. He brought together at the Vatican Hindu leaders, Buddhist leaders, Jewish leaders, Muslim leaders, and even the Grand Ayatollah, one of the Grand Ayatollahs. So it was an amazing initiative to fight slavery, to wipe out slavery around the world in all its forms, whether it's human trafficking, organ trafficking, prostitution, child trafficking, by 2020. And these leaders signed a joint declaration committing themselves to this initiative. And that's a very powerful initiative across so many different faiths. And to see all these leaders at the Vatican at the same time was really quite remarkable.
Mm-hmm. You reported that the joint declaration was organized by the Global Freedom Network. Is that a religious or a secular group?
That is a multi-faith initiative that was set up earlier this year, and that also involves Jewish, Muslim, and Catholic leaders. And it was essentially driven by an Australian billionaire called Andrew Forrest, who has really been pushing this initiative to bring all these people together. And it was officially launched at the Vatican in March this year. So this is the next stage. Where do they go from next? Well, it's a tall order, isn't it? How do you wipe out human trafficking? How do you wipe out slavery? They want to try and get political leaders and religious leaders to really start by saying it's not all right, it's not okay, we have to fight this, and also go to businesses who might be sourcing materials or products in countries where people are being used as slaves to produce these products, to go to the source, go through companies and organisations and say, if you are using these practices, it's time to get rid of them and wipe them out.
Mm. Joe, how do you see the level of interreligious engagement from Pope Francis in comparison with his predecessors' efforts to involve themselves in interreligious relations?
Well, I think Pope Francis has made it very clear from the moment of his election that he's committed to this. And we've seen so much evidence of that already. He invited the Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew to his initial ceremony at the Vatican when he was made a pope officially. And even from then, he's been building relationships with Muslims and Jews in particular, and reaching out to other faiths. This week during the anti-slavery initiative at the Vatican, we saw the Anglican Archbishop, the head of the Anglican Church, Reverend Justin Welby here from the UK, and he's also had continual dialogue with the Pope. So we're seeing it across many different religions, and it seems that the Pope is very committed to this and he's building on what he established as an archbishop in Buenos Aires.
Joe, as closely as you follow this Pope and his way of doing things, I'm curious, do you think most people get him? In other words, when you see mainstream news coverage of his words and his actions, does it usually reflect what you experience in your day-to-day work covering the Vatican? Do they get it?
Well, I think Pope Francis is a remarkable leader. I think we're still in a honeymoon phase, if you like, where many people see the positives. I think it's important to remember he's a shrewd leader. He's very intelligent. He's strong-willed about what he believes in. And yet we have this wonderful spontaneity about him where he might embrace a disabled person in the crowd. He telephones people who've suffered some sort of trauma or who've written to him to tell them about a personal problem. These spontaneous gestures are really quite remarkable. And his whole approach to living in a very humble way, without the trappings of office, even seeing him at the anti-slavery initiative this week, sitting surrounded in the midst of the other religious leaders. He wasn't sitting above them. He was really sitting in the middle of them and speaking to the group in a very, very informal way. And I think people really respond to those gestures.
Josephine McKenna is a veteran journalist who has more than 30 years of experience in diverse media. Based in Rome, Joe covers all things Vatican for Religion News Service. You can read her work at religionnews.com, as well as in leading publications nationwide. Joe, it's been an honor for me to get to talk with you, and you are so helpful with your insights, very illuminating with your comments. I thank you for taking the time to be with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thanks so much, Wilton. Have a great day, and it's been great to be part of the show.